Welcome to the R Word Podcast.
I'm Dustin.
I'm Lowell.
And we are here to discuss reparations in the church.
What it takes is all of me. I'm still not who I'm meant to be. I'm holding back. I just relax, indulge in insecurities.
Hi, friends. Lowell Taylor here. In this episode, the Zacchaeus Foundation board members, Dr. Caree Banton, Chris Seawood, and Lynette Washington, will introduce themselves. So we hope you enjoy this month's episode. Thanks.
All right, we're recording. There should be, okay, there's the little light saying we're recording. So we're going to go with this. Would somebody want to kick us off with who are you and why are you here as a board member?
Okay, sure. I'll start. I'm Caree Banton, and I'm a board member of the Zacchaeus Foundation. I'm a board member because of the ways in which reparations show up in the work that I do, not only in the community, but in my academic studies. I'm a historian by trade. And so I'm, you know, all the work that I do around slavery, around abolition, around colonization, all of that kind of helped to shape conversations, or at least a conversation that comes after that is reparations. And so when I had the opportunity to be on the board, I figure I could, you know, share that knowledge to provide that historical context, do work in that area. Plus, you know, I also had a program when I was director of African-American Studies called the Communiversity, where we're bringing the university and the community together. That's how I kind of see my role. We have to educate the public as to why reparations, why it is necessary, the historical context, and so on and so forth.
Good stuff. I guess I'll go next. I'm Lynette Washington. I come to this work through, I guess, just a lot of personal experiences, interacting with my family members, both my white family members and my African-American family members, and now having the opportunity to teach and be in the classroom in a university context as well, pursuing a master's degree. All of those things have kind of shaped and formed and brought me to this place where the topic of reparations just feels right to be a part of. The idea of making amends for things that were stolen, for bringing to light things that I know for me were, I just feel like were hidden from me for most of my life. They just weren't taught. And now to be aware and to think about having the opportunity to teach people what I didn't receive so that equity can be achieved, so that the truth can be known, I think is really important to me. As a believer in Jesus, I think the truth is really critical. As Americans living in a community or in a country that has a lot of diversity and a lot of tough history that we really do need to sort through. And it just feels really right to be a part of something where we're fixing something that was broken. Yeah, I think I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, I'm Chris Seawood, and I'm a member of the Zacchaeus Foundation board. Again, approached this work really out of relationship with Lowell, number one, big believer in Lowell and his commitment to the work of reparations, but also as a person of faith, I echo the sentiments of justice, I believe, as it is taught and is threaded throughout, I believe, in scripture, but also, you know, the necessity of reparations, but also, as Lowell and I have discussed, I also approach this work with a bit of cynicism, if I'm being completely candid. So I sit on the board with that cynicism. So I take a bit of a realistic approach in trying to take the approach of, yes, reparations should happen, But in the event it doesn't, or what are approaches we can take? Just try to take a real world perspective as we approach the work. So that's kind of how I look at it, my worldview on reparations as I sit on the board.
My husband and I were talking the other day. Well, it's been a few weeks ago now. We were out for a walk and we're talking about like dreaming, and just the ability to say, that we believe a certain problem could be fixed. You know, like we were, I think we were talking about poverty at that particular conversation, but then whether it's racism, whether it's reparations. It's interesting to look because I tend to kind of live in that space of I want to just hold on to that phrase of yeah, of course we could solve this. I don't know if we will, but I know that we could. And he had this much more, I'm not sure I'm willing to even say that it's possible because it just feels so far removed from reality. So I hear you trying to maybe strike the balance. And Curry, I love your the historian piece. When I was young, like college, even like history was just boring to me, honestly.
That's what you
And
actually say.
yeah, and now I just geek out over it just constantly. And I've worked more and more of it into my class because I think it's just critical. I teach multicultural health. So I'm like, if we don't understand history, there's no way we can understand how we got to these health disparities that we have today. And so now it's like, I'm just talking about it all the time. And I say that to my students. I'm like, but I think maybe it's partly because I didn't have, like, we only get certain pieces and parts of history to help us connect with it, not even geek out over it, but to help us have a better connection to what history means to us in the present. So I love what you shared about how that's your niche, your expertise that you're bringing to the table. Okay, I find myself acting like a facilitator, so I'll just keep going. So the next question for us is, what does racial healing and reparations mean to you? And so I guess I'll kick it back out there to you guys, maybe, and see if one of you want to bite first.
What does racial healing and reparations mean to us? That's an interesting question, right? Especially thinking about it from a historical perspective, which, as I mentioned, that's kind of how I come. And that's kind of what has shaped the kind of scholarly studies on reparations have shaped how I've thought about it. In recent times, as we all seen, we've all seen that this has become a topical issue. Lots of scholarly works have been written on reparations in the Caribbean. All the Caribbean nations are suing Britain and their former colonial masters for reparations. And Hilary Beckles, who is the Vice Chancellor of the University of the West Indies, wrote a book called Britain's Black Debt. So that book has helped to shape how I think about reparations because we're in 2024, and I do research on Barbados and Liberia. And at one time, before I became an American citizen, if I wanted to go to Britain, which is the place that has all the archives for the Caribbean, I would have to get a visa. So this history that has shaped the Caribbean is almost like locked away, and there's a credentializing process to access it. It's almost like how a lot of Black history now is behind paywalls in ancestry.com. You got to pay to when we didn't have access to that because we were enslaved people. And, you know, so if you want to know where we come from, it's like you have to swipe that credit card. Yeah, so Britain's Black Debt has taught me a lot. When you think about in the Caribbean and in anywhere in the African diaspora, where you see Black people are faced with issues of high blood pressure, diabetes, this can all be traced back to slavery, right? These are medical issues that went back to how the body was able to metabolize sugar and salt and the high stress environment. And if you scholars who study epigenetics, right, who studies how traumas travel in oppressed populations, the Jews who experience Holocaust, certain patterns, right, and things that they experience, Africans in the diaspora who experience the transatlantic slave trade and the Middle Passage, these certain experiences are still affecting Black people. So when you come from that background, there needs to be some kind of a healing that needs to happen. And it's not just, okay, cure the diabetes or the high blood pressure. There is a breach that has taken place that we need to make whole. If you've read Ta-Nehisi Coates' The Case for Reparations, that article that was published some time ago in The Atlantic provides an explanation about why this needs to happen, right? He said 250 years of slavery, 90 years of Jim Crow, 60 years of redlining, of separate but equal, 35 years of racist housing policy until we reckon with our compounding moral debts. America will never be whole. America will never be whole. So it's not even just about Black people. It's not that reparations have never been given, because reparations were given to certain populations. Japanese were in internment camps, the Jews, even slaveholders received reparations for the loss of their enslaved properties in Haiti, in the United States, in the Caribbean. They finished paying off British slaveholders in t around 2015, because it was about, I think, over 40% of the GDP and the budget at the time. For me, something was taken and something is owed. And beyond that, it's about a national healing, a coming together, a recognition that a part of us is not well because something was done. And it's just the mere recognition and the acknowledgement. And even that is just difficult. Just a bill to approve the study of reparations has been challenging for the United States. And I think by refusing to do that, we persist with this idea that African Americans and Black people are not full people, because recognizing that something was done to this group of people and that us as citizens together in a social contract, that it requires something of all of us, is, I think, a part of what is preventing America from being the nation that it could be. And I think about the larger benefits it might have for society. I think about, for instance, I'll give an example, when Barack Obama was trying to pass the healthcare bill. And if you look at the map of the plantation South and where people who had issues of ill health lived, it kind of lined up. But instead of saying, I'm thinking about it, like, here we had this issue of slavery, and people who still live in these area or of that descent are still struggling with this issue, and if we pass this here healthcare bill, it would benefit them, but also the nation, that it got marred with like scandals of its socialism. It's, because again, there's still this idea that Black people in America do not deserve anything. So we have to repair that breach. So when I think about reparations, that's what I think about.
Everything that you just said made me think of this story. I was driving to Louisville earlier this summer to watch my daughter play basketball, and I finished listening to the book White Too Long by Robert Jones. And there's a chapter in that book where he's talking, putting together the picture of what white supremacy looks like, particularly in the context of how it's woven into Christianity and the practice of religion. And he weaves all this together through the Dylann Roof, who murdered folks in the church in Charleston, South Carolina. And that story was super personal to us because that's where my husband is from. And shortly after that happened, we happened to be in Charleston visiting his family, and we went down to the church and just saw all the the flowers, and they had a big board up where people could come by and sign that they had visited. And the way he put this together and how it was all interwoven, it just really, like, I spent about an hour after that as I was on my 9 hour drive just crying. Like, there was this sense of deep remorse. Like, I needed to go through hearing that story written that way, making those connections, and then sitting there grieving and feeling I needed to, like, repent of what was, like, I needed to go through this, but it was incredibly painful and hard. And it feels like, to me, when we start talking about reparations or racial healing, that's what people are trying to avoid at all cost.
We can
So,
have hard conversations.
yeah. So as soon as you start mentioning something that was broken hundreds of years ago, my wall immediately, whether I'm trained, my implicit behaviors, like, everything immediately pops up and says, no, that's dangerous, maybe emotionally, for me to go there. And that was this moment I had in my car all by myself, just choosing to listen and understanding that walking through this pain of understanding what has happened and understanding my place in it, even though the root of it happened a long, long time ago, but being willing to step in and feel pain so that I can heal and have a clear understanding of what our history is together, and so people who have been harmed can heal. Then we can look forward to what our future could be. And I still think, like, in general, we just don't do a good job of healing. If we take race away for a moment in any context in our lives, as we think about mental health right now, in our young people, or as we think about the way we grieve when we lose a family member, when someone dies, like, we just don't do healing well. So it just kind of enables us to do it now in this broader context where it just feels insurmountable. And to know that reparations is not, it's not just about money. Money is a part of it, absolutely, 100,000%. But it's so much deeper. But what does healing truly, truly look like? And how is not being healed just an infection that just continues to grow inside of us? Particularly, I guess, as white people, we're just suffering on the inside because of our, I don't want to say delusion, but delusion of what the world is and what we've been taught that it is.
Yeah, I think there's just a, I just think there's a dissonance that exists when it comes to healing and repair. I think when you speak corporately of the entire diaspora, African diaspora, and or even minorities in general, I just think there's just this full disregard for our shared humanity. And unfortunately, white Americans in particularly have just done a really good job at just creating this romanticized idea that, you know, because of American exceptionalism and via control of the country for the last 300, 400 years, have been able to just create a narrative that has enabled them to tell a story to enable them to create a cognitive dissonance from everybody else's shared humanity. And I think that creates and makes it harder for healing to occur. The only analogy I can really relate it to is just like kind of living in a home where you might have, there's trauma in a home, and the person that causes the trauma just kind of ignores the trauma in the home. And you're the cause of the trauma, and everybody knows that the trauma exists, but you kind of force everybody to ignore the trauma for the cause of just moving on with life. You've moved on with life, but you're the cause of the trauma, but everybody else is just kind of still in the house dealing with all the trauma that you caused. And to me, that's like America. And that's kind of like, to me, how white America has been. And so it's just kind of like there's been no true recourse. And to Caree's point, African Americans still suffer at a disproportionate rate due to slavery. I liken it to what I call PTSD, and I know there are people, professionals that call it that as well. And I think it's literally in our DNA that we pass down from generation to generation because it's just unhealed. And then you look up and we kind of get gaslit when we try to address it. So I think it's a necessity, but sometimes it becomes frustrating to try to address it. And then some folks just probably end up checking out of the entire process because it becomes futile.
You, Dustin McGowan, one of our other board members, he said something quite similar to what you're saying, Chris. And then he talked about how us as white people get we can get burned out pretty quickly, or we start to hit the walls that you're talking about, and just like, oh well, I gave it my best shot. I guess it's not meant to be, but to recognize that the work is, like, to use the simple analogy, it's a marathon, not a sprint. But just this sense of the privilege of getting to suffer alongside people in something that's ridiculously hard to keep battling in, seems to kind of help motivate me to see, like, this is hundreds of years in the making, and it can't be solved in the moment. And it's very, very important for me as a white American to step up. Right before COVID, Lowell's wife and I were part of a group. We hosted a documentary viewing of 13th. And we coined our little phrase, we have to do the white people work. Of just like, no, it's our job to turn and face the people who we were like in terms of not knowing and not understanding anything, and now we're beginning to know and beginning to understand and learning how to articulate things in the hopes that other folks like us will begin to take the same journey forward. And it feels like small, insignificant steps, but I hope at the end of my life I can look back and say that I was steadfast and willing to suffer alongside of people who've had this experience that I can only listen and learn about. But so appreciate you being in your brutal honesty, maybe. I appreciate
Cynicism.
Cynicism there, that was it. Yeah, I appreciate that very much, and it does help me to check myself. Okay, y'all, got a few minutes left, and our last question isn't really a question but more of a comment of what else would you like to say? As people are listening to us have this conversation, what do you want to say? What do you want them to walk away with? What could be an action step maybe for them? What's something in your mind or in your heart that you really would love people to hear today?
I think that honestly, as much as I have said that I am a cynic of reparations, that does not mean by any stretch of the imagination that I do not believe in reparations. I want to be clear about that. So I absolutely am a proponent of reparations, really in all forms. And I know we kind of hit on earlier about just a little bit monetary forms. I do believe it is a reparative justice that African Americans, really the African diaspora around the world, if I'm being honest, are owed. There are more than just Americans that suffered from the transatlantic slave trade. So I think it just needs to be looked at globally, and I know there are folks that are looking at it globally. I am an adherent for reparations. What I struggle with is just the political and social will for America in general, white Americans specifically, to do what is right and necessary. Now, I know there are folks like the Zacchaeus Foundation that are heeding the call to do what's right. And I appreciate this work. So I would encourage anybody that are like-minded, that feel they have the will to come alongside and support this work and undergird it, because it is worthy. Lowell and Lynette and Korea and all of us are in this work to bring about a level of healing and to come alongside African Americans in Northwest Arkansas to do reparative work. So I encourage you all to come alongside and support us and work with us.
And just to add to what was just said about the United Nations and studies that I mentioned, Hilary Beckles' Britain's Black Debt earlier, Randall Robinson's The Debt is one of those earlier works that was written by an African American talking about the reparations. In 1951, African Americans presented a historic petition to the United Nations for a relief from a crime of the United States governments against the Negro people, charging genocide that the United States was committing against African Americans with the lynching and the inequalities in health and police brutality. This is 1951. So we could think about it from the perspective of victims' rights under reparation for reparation under international law. Or we could think about it from a moral or, as a national issue and so on. A bill has been introduced in Massachusetts by State Senator William Owens, and that language, as we might know, that John Conyers was a Detroit Democrat, had called for a federal study of slavery discrimination and appropriate remedies. He had introduced that bill in the House and it did not leave the Judiciary Committee, and he reintroduced it every year, same result. We can look, as I mentioned, at all the other efforts to pay reparations to everyone else, and then think about why is it when it comes to African peoples, this is such a difficult issue. What kind of mirror is African people holding up to the US or to white people when this reparation issue comes into being? I know, Lynette, you mentioned that it's very difficult, and it's the defensiveness starts to pop up, right? Because it's like, oh, well, it wasn't me. I wasn't born at that time. My family were not, and then they start to throw out the statistic, only 4 in 10 families own slaves. And we don't understand that this is a legacy of our nation. We're breathing in the smog created by this system, and not just me. Everybody. And until that, you don't know what you could be. I tell my students all the time that, oh, imagine you grow up racist and you miss out on Jamaican oxtail because you were taught something about Black people. You don't know how good that food is, or some Haitian mushroom rice or some jollof. We don't know the potential that we could have if we were to attend to simple things, but because of the narratives that were structured so many years ago, and we have this inability to have difficult conversations, and this is on a national level, on an individual level. I mean, if you have a relationship, we know how difficult conversations, how awkward it is, like, my anxiety is going up, I have perfectionism, but this is America. America has put people on the moon. America has, created some of the biggest innovations. But a conversation that involves some of its earliest citizens We have been putting that on the back bench. And I don't know what it's going to take to get the courage, but whatever America thinks it can be, and I have to say that African Americans have been doing the work in this country and holding up this mural from the enslaved people who ran away and showed America what liberty was. Frederick Douglass, who used his great oration to say, America, this is what you say, and you're not doing it. What the slave is the 4th of July to MLK, right? America, African Americans have been consistently doing the work. It's like, America, you could be great, but you keep avoiding putting off this one thing. And so many of the things that America value now, the ways in which it like trots around Martin Luther King to the world as if he wasn't like assassinated by racists, like we're so proud of him now. Imagine if they were to take the full leap,
Well, real briefly, I will just try to say, just particularly to white people, just take a chance and begin to listen differently. Attempt to forge relationships with people who have different experiences, and don't put the expectation on them, but on yourself to listen and to learn. But just be brave to say, maybe I'm wrong. And it is a marathon, not a sprint. It's a journey we can all do together. So, well, thanks y'all for hanging out. I love this. This is fun to me. I don't know if that's the right to say. But I love getting to know y'all better, for sure. And I love that we get to partner in this. And yeah, I look forward to seeing you guys soon.
Yeah,
So
all right.
yeah. Well, go forth and enjoy the rest of your day and week. And yeah, we'll talk soon.
All right. See y'all later. Thanks.
All right, bye-bye.
Takes all of me. I'm still not who I'm meant to be.
Thanks for listening to today's episode.
Subscribe to the R Word wherever you get podcasts.
And learn more about the R Word podcast, the R Word events, and the Zacchaeus Foundation on our website, thezacchaeusfoundation.org.
Apathetic. I'm complicit in the prejudice, it's automatic. I take advantage being born into my demographic. But what's a blessing when it generates a struggle of a color for the privilege of another?